Chapter 37. By noon, the streets of London are a concert of bells calling one and all to church. Grandmama, Tom, and I sit on hard wooden pews, letting the Reverend's words wash over us.
Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child, and when ye have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also.
I glance about the church. All around me heads are bowed in prayer. People seem content, happy. After all, it is Christmas. A light-dappled stained-glass window shows an angel delivering the Annunciation. At his feet, Mary kneels, trembling as she receives this fearful message from her celestial visitor. Her face shows the awe and fear of that news, of the gift she has not asked for, but will carry nonetheless. And I wonder why there is no passage to describe her terrible doubt.
Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth his men, and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and in all the coasts thereof.
Why is there no panel showing women saying, No, I'm sorry, I don't want this gift, you may have it back. I've sheep to look after and bread to bake, and I've no desire to be a holy messenger. That is the window I long to see. A ray of light breaks through the glass, and for a moment the angel seems to flare like the sun. I am allowed to spend the afternoon with Felicity and Anne, so that Grandmama and Tom may tend to Father. Mrs. Worthington is seeing to the outfitting of little Polly, which has put Felicity into a hateful mood to match my own. Only Anne is enjoying the day. It is the first Christmas she can remember in a real home, with a ball to attend, and she's positively giddy about it, badgering us with questions. "Should I wear flowers and pearls in my hair, or is it too gauche?" she asks.
"Gauche," Felicity responds. "I don't see why we have to take her in. There are plenty of relatives more suited, I should think."
I sit at Felicity's dressing table, running a brush through my hair, counting the strokes, seeing the hurt in Kartik's eyes with each swipe of the brush. 64, 65, 66. "They fawn and fret over her as if she's a visiting princess," Felicity grumbles.
"She's a very pretty little girl," Anne says thoughtlessly. "I was thinking of wearing perfume. Gemma, does Tom find girls who wear scent too bold?"
"He is attracted to the smell of manure," Felicity says. "You might wallow in the stables to bring out the full flower of his love."
"You are in quite a mood," Anne grumbles.
"I shouldn't have danced with him. I shouldn't have let him kiss me. But I wanted him to kiss me, and then I insulted him."
"Oh, it's all such a bother,"
Felicity harrumphs as she makes her way to the bed, which is awash in discarded stockings, silk and petticoats. The whole of Felicity's cupboards, it seems, are splayed out for the world to see, and yet she can't seem to find anything that suits.
"I'm not going,"
Felicity blurts out. She sprawled petulantly on a chaise in her dressing gown, woolen stockings pooled about her ankles. All pretense of modesty has been abandoned. "It's your mother's ball," I say. "You must go. 67, 68.
"I've nothing to wear."
I gesture grandly to the bed and resume my counting. "Won't you be wearing one of the gowns your mother had made for you in Paris?" Anne asks. She's holding one of the dresses against her body, turning this way and that. She gives a slight curtsy to an imaginary escort.
"They're so bourgeois," Felicity snorts.
Anne runs her fingers over the water-blue silk, the beadwork along the delicate neckline.
"I think this one is lovely."
"Then you wear it."
Anne pulls her fingers back as if they burn. "I couldn't begin to fit into it." Felicity smirks.
"You could have, if you'd given up those morning scones."
"It wouldn't make any difference. I would only insult the dress."
Felicity springs up with a sigh that borders on a growl.
"Why do you do that?"
"Do what?"
Anne asks.
"Belittle yourself at every opportunity."
"I was only making light of things."
"No, you weren't. Was she, Gemma?"
87, 88, 89,
I answer loudly.
"Anne, If you keep saying how unworthy you are, people will come to believe it.
Anne shrugs, returning the dress to the heap on the bed. They believe what they see.
Then change what they see.
How?
Wear the dress. We could let it out on the sides.
100. I turn to face them. Yes, but then it wouldn't fit you any longer.
Felicity's grin is feral.
Exactly. Do you really think that's a good idea? I say. The dress is quite expensive, made in Paris to fit Felicity.
Won't your mother be cross? Anne asks. She'll be far too involved with her guests to notice what we're wearing. She'll only be concerned with what she's wearing and whether it makes her look young.
It seems a bad idea, but Anne's already touching the silk again as if it were a treasured kitten, and I'm not going to be the one to spoil it for her. Felicity jumps up.
I shall call Franny. For all her tiresomeness, she is a most excellent seamstress.
Franny is summoned. When Felicity explains what she wants done, the girl's eyes go wide with disbelief. Should I ask Mrs. Worthington first, miss?
No, Franny. It is to be a surprise for my mother. She will be so very happy to see Miss Bradshaw well turned out.
Very well, miss. Franny measures Anne. It will be difficult, miss. I cannot say if there will be enough fabric.
Anne blushes.
Oh, please don't bother. I'll wear what I wore to the opera.
Franny, Felicity says, making her name into a sweet lullaby. You are such a skilled seamstress. I am sure that if anyone can do it, you can.
But once I alter it, miss, I can't change it back again, Franny says.
Leave that to me, Felicity says, pushing her out the door with the dress in her arms. Now, let's see to giving you a waist, Felicity barks.
Anne braces herself against the wall with both arms. She starts to turn back to say something to me, but Felicity pushes her head forward again.
You're not going to pinch me too terribly, are you?
Yes, I say, matter-of-factly. Now hold still. I give a sharp tug on her corset laces, cinching in Anne's waist as much as I possibly can.
Heavens! She gasps.
Again, Felicity says. I pull hard, and Anne straightens, panting for breath, tears pricking at her eyes.
Too tight! She croaks.
Do you want to wear the dress? Felicity taunts.
Yes, but I don't want to die.
All right, no use having you faint on us. I loosen the laces a bit and colour floods Anne's face. Here, sit, I say, guiding her to the chaise. She has no choice but to sit straight as a church steeple. She breathes as heavily as a worked horse.
It isn't quite so bad once you're accustomed to it,
Anne whispers, giving a weak smile. Felicity throws herself on the chaise again.
Liar. What did you make of Nell Hawkins' performance? It was pure gibberish to me, Anne says, struggling for breath. Tom looked very handsome, I think. He's so kind.
I've not been able to make sense of it myself, I answer.